This call is being recorded.
It's the Thirsty Thursday edition of the Bet the Board podcast. I'm Todd Furman. We'll be joined by Payne Insider in just a matter of seconds as we look to digest all the games this coming week in the NFL. Payne, as we try and see some of these line moves throughout the course of the week since we last discussed the board on Monday, anything really jump off the page at you, kind sir?
I'm a little shocked that we're seeing Baltimore now installed as the favorite, a four-point move from the Pinnacle Open of Baltimore plus three. So that's a little surprising to me. I'm shocked that Baltimore is now the favorite in that spot.
We've also seen a couple of road favorite numbers start to take off. I know we broke down Miami-Jacksonville a little bit on Monday. That game from 4.5 as high as 6 in some spots. You've seen Seattle go from 3.5 out to 5. And Kansas City now flirting with going through that key number of 7, but we'll get to those games shortly. Before we get into the matter at hand, though, I wanted to thank everyone again for using the hashtag AskBetTheBoard. Questions continue to get better and better each week, and we will definitely address those later in the show. Payne, we may as well start at the top of the board. Of course, we'll get to the San Diego-Denver game before we wrap things up. But let's go across the pond and look at Detroit-Atlanta. We know this will be a popular game for folks to bet across the country. It is a standalone game, 9:30 Eastern, 6:30 Pacific. Detroit now a 3.5-point favorite, total of 46.5 against the Falcons at Wembley.
Yeah, basically this game for me, we'd like to see, obviously, the sharp guys, I think we'll play Atlanta here if they can get a couple fours popping in the market. The public will be all over Detroit here, and as much as I'd like to get on Atlanta, we just have that question mark of how bad their offensive line is. And when you're facing a team like Detroit, that's just not a good matchup. So this is a tough one for me. I've always kind of waffled back and forth about how big matchups are in your handicapping. And over the years, I think I've devalued some of those matchups. But this one, to me, it is tough to not really look at, and I think you have to factor it in, and that might keep me off this game altogether.
And from the classification of somewhat meaningless trends, favorites 5-1 against the spread the past 6 London games, and this is more fascinating than anything else. The team designated as the home team have lost 6 of those 9 games, so the Falcons, though, might be thankful to take their miserable brand of football across the pond and at least lighten the burden for some of their loyal fans for 1 week. Bears and Patriots, one of the bigger moves we've seen, as you predicted on the Monday edition of the pod. We said there would be money on the Bears entering the market, and that's exactly what we've seen. 6.5 at the market peak, down to a consensus of 6, but even a 5.5 at one of the world's sharpest books.
Yeah, the 7s, when we shot this on Monday, had no chance of lasting in the marketplace. Everyone seemed to grab 7s. Monday evening, Tuesday morning, those disappeared completely. 5.5, pretty much all of Tuesday. We're now seeing some money back on New England, just a little bit. More of a book move in my mind, getting this back to 6. Most likely there will be that public money coming in on New England. It'll just be a matter of time, I think, though, Sunday, before we see another wave of sharp money on the Bears. So I think you did a good job if you were able to grab 7 early in the week, as we told you to do on this podcast.
Yeah, I mean, and you talk about another wave of sharp money. We've seen this before, as you talk about. Thursday limits typically open, so books are going to set their positions knowing kind of where the money's going to come in. Is it even worth considering that this number could dip as low as, say, 4 on Sunday, knowing that there still is an appetite for the underdog in this spot?
You know, we've seen it. We saw it last week with the Jacksonville Jaguars, and we've seen it consistently throughout this season. It doesn't take a ton of sharp money to get this number to go from 6 down to that 4.5, 4 range. You're talking dead zone when you're dealing with 5.5, 5. So it's typically a one move kind of thing through the 6 on down to 4.5. So it would not shock me at all if this game closes in the 4, 4.5 range.
Yeah, I think you could see a little bit of money line action as well come in on the Bears in this particular spot, especially given the injury to Chandler Jones for the Patriots, one of their elite pass rushers. Jay Cutler may relish the opportunity to actually have time in the pocket. You talked about the dead zone and obviously referencing more numbers. Well, there's a team that apparently most of the media wants to put in that classification, and that would be the Seattle Seahawks right now. Suddenly 3-3, the team can't get out of their own way. 3.5-point favorites number, like we talked about, has climbed out to 5. What do we make of the Seahawks in terms of how we handicap them, knowing they're going on the road across the country for the second week in a row?
I'm not sure we know what to make of either of these teams. Obviously, Carolina has done well treading water with all their injuries. Seattle, this is a big game for them. If they go below 500, I think it'll be a real turning point in their season. I'm not sure they can drop this game, but we saw Seattle in this spot last year come out with, I wouldn't say a convincing win, took a goal line stand late in that game. So there is some revenge here for Carolina. Again, dealing with that dead zone number of 5. Public's going to be all over Seattle here. I do not, at this stage in the game, have an appetite for laying this number on the road with that offense kind of in disarray right now. But it's certainly not, I'm not going to be jumping on Carolina here. I think this would probably be the game if Seattle were to prove what they are and prove that they're a Super Bowl champion. This is a game that they're going to kind of rally and show what they're worth. I don't want anything to do with this game. I want them to prove it to me that they are a Super Bowl contender once again this year.
And you talk about that game, definitely Seattle will be the public side for breakfast football. 3 out of every 4 tickets, at least early in the week, coming in on the road favored Seahawks in this particular spot. I want to talk about a game where we've seen a change at quarterback. It looks like the Tennessee Titans have, I don't want to say thrown in the towel in this season, but they probably should, giving Zach Mettenberger his first start of his young NFL career as a 3-point home underdog now against Ryan Fitzpatrick and the Houston Texans. How do we go about handicapping the Titans moving forward, seeing that they seem to be trending in that youth direction?
This is, for me, it's a tough spot when you talk about what both teams are doing. Houston, obviously, short week, played Monday night on the road. Now you're going again, another road game. Not a ton of travel here. Looks like Clowney is back. Houston opened a 1-point favorite, now out to 3 at Chris. When you factor in Mettenberger, I don't have a huge downgrade on him over what seems to be the Herbal Essence spokesman. And Whitehurst.
That was one hell of a picture, though, you could see from Mettenberger or Whitehurst. A lot of flow going on in that Titans locker room.
So, you know, to me, I don't think it's a 2-point move. And this, obviously, at this stage, is more than a 2-point move when you're talking and dealing with the 3. So I think maybe overestimated. And what we've seen with these young quarterbacks, it's advantage to them, actually, as crazy as this is going to sound, when there's not a lot of film on them. We saw Teddy Bridgewater earlier spot this year. Not much film on him. He has a field day. The offense has a field day. Now after one game where teams can kind of game plan, expect to see, it's just much tougher. The offense has been very stagnant for the Vikings since that outburst against the Falcons. So I think game one, maybe a little advantage to not knowing what Mettenberger brings to the table. And I'm not sure 3 will last very long in this market.
And not to spend too much time on this, but obviously the Titans a bit familiar with Ryan Fitzpatrick on the other side, the short week here for the Texans. And not to get into too much of that, you know, X's and O's, NFL draft scout stuff, but you obviously handicap college like I do. Do we believe Mettenberger can actually be a serviceable quarterback at this level? Maybe not right now, but a guy that can hold down the fort, more so than Charlie Whitehurst, who appears to be a perennial backup.
You know, I see no issues with him kind of holding the fort down. I don't know the long-term potential for him. I think it's worth a stab in the dark. Obviously, you only invest a late-round draft pick in him, and, you know, you hope to hit gold a la Brady status. Every team tries to do that. But, you know, mentally, I don't know if he's that guy. I don't know if he's got the overall arm strength. He likes to kind of fit tight balls in there and take risks and chances. So I don't know if that works from a game manager status, because I don't know if he's much more than that. So, you know, I don't know what he is long-term potential, but for this week, if you can get a 3, I think, you know, it might be worth a look.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fascinating to see where this number settles. As you talk about, sometimes the unknown can send the market in a number of different directions. And it's funny to hear you talk about Mettenberger potentially being a game manager, because this guy is clearly looking that's the direction his career is headed. Andy Dalton leads his Bengals back into action. This number has swung a ton from where we saw it on Monday, since he going from a 2.5-point favorite on the open, or even a soft 3, depending on where you look. Now a 1-point home underdog against the Baltimore Ravens and Joe Flacco.
Yeah, you really have to ask yourself, where does this line stop? And I think potentially with some AJ Green news, it might stop. But, you know, public is all over Baltimore here. Nobody wants anything to do with Cincinnati. Another stinker last week on the road in a spot that there was some sharp guy support there on Cincinnati. It was kind of split. But if there was ever a spot here, you know, this would be it for Cincinnati. And then when you factor in such splits for both teams, road and home and away, Baltimore typically does not do very well on the road. Cincinnati, they thrive in this spot. But then you have to factor in another revenge spot where Cincinnati went to Baltimore first week of the season and came away with a win. So there's a lot of factors involved in this game. Obviously, I think Cincinnati, if we get a healthy A.J. Green, you know, I would have to look that way. And if it was me, you know, looking at ones right now, I think you'd probably have a fantastic teaser leg with Cincinnati taking them through the 3 and the 7 on a 6.5-point teaser right now.
Do you make anything of the fact that about 70% of the action is coming in on the Ravens here? Do we expect that to continue up and through kickoff on Sunday?
You know, I do. I would expect to see that. Obviously, I think the A.J. Green news might trump some of the bet tickets. Everything that I'm hearing and things that he's kind of expressed to his teammates is he would love to give it out, to give it a go. He has been practicing lightly on the side. Tomorrow will be the key day to see what he can do from a team perspective if he's going to practice on a limited basis with the team. When you've dropped this many games, you have a division game on deck, I think he's really going to try to give it a go. How healthy, obviously, is the key in determining whether I'm going to be on Cincinnati or not.
Definitely makes a ton of sense. And like you said, it'll be fascinating to try and figure out exactly where this number will go. And I think this late game, just as fascinating when you try and figure out the Indianapolis Colts going on the road to Pittsburgh to take on the Steelers. Indy, a 3 everywhere as we look at the betting boards painted right now. 90% of the early indications are that the Colts are the beloved side for the public, as they have been each of the last handful of weeks. We know in this late time slot, numbers have had a way of taking off. Do we think that this number gets to 3.5? And the question I have here, is it going to be professional money that keeps this number holding 3, given what they saw from the Steelers, or maybe didn't see on Monday night?
This will be tough to gauge, because there were some soft 3s, and I thought we were headed towards, or I should say back towards, that territory of 2 where it opened at a lot of shops. So I'm pretty surprised to see this continually moving forward. I don't think we see a 3.5. I just think there's enough sharp sediment towards the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, I wouldn't say it's a great matchup for the Steelers with Andrew Luck and that offense and how poor Pittsburgh's defense has played. Some signs of life after the first quarter against Houston. But this Pittsburgh team is really bad. And so it's tough for me to back them. But at this stage in the game, in this particular spot, it's Pittsburgh or nothing for me. And I think playing the waiting game does not hurt if you're a Pittsburgh backer here. I think you only get a better line moving forward if you wait.
Yeah, I'd be of the same mindset here. I think 3 is going to be very difficult for books to hold with only, like we said, 2 late games going. Oakland, Cleveland, of course, Indy and Pittsburgh will be that marquee game on CBS Sunday afternoon. And then you look at the Sunday card, the biggest matchup maybe of the entire day. Green Bay, New Orleans on Sunday night. We're seeing the Saints right now a 1.5-point favorite, depending on where you look. Some money on this over from 54 out to 56. Clearly, we know who this game means a lot more to, and that's the homebound New Orleans Saints.
Yeah, we even saw this total open as low as 52, 52.5. Some sharp guys did get out ahead of that. At 56, you know, I don't have much appetite going over here. Fast surface, which is tough. New Orleans, when you look at this game, we have seen some money today enter the market on that side. Some of the picks out there disappeared. You're now looking at pretty much a predominant 1.5 across the board as New Orleans being a favorite. I can't disagree with that move. I think at some point in the game, I will look towards New Orleans. I'm not sure when that will be. But this is a must-win spot, and I hate to, you know, kind of use that as an angle, but this really is a must-win spot for them. Green Bay, I don't think they've been as really impressive as the last 3 weeks have shown. Yet the Vikings on Thursday night, they're undermanned. They should have lost in Miami. Last week, just a tough, tough spot for Carolina, back-to-back road games. They played essentially 5 quarters of football the week before, and Green Bay just wore them out early. So I haven't been as impressed with Green Bay as most people have, and I think this is kind of a spot for New Orleans to make a statement.
Now, when folks are listening to this podcast preparing for the weekend, do you think it's better to move early if you like the Saints here or wait this game out, figuring that maybe there's enough public money out there in the market, seeing that, you know, 75, nearly 80% of the tickets coming in on the road underdog Packers could push this game closer to a pick 'em?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's going to hurt waiting. I really don't. I don't think this even comes close to touching three. So I think you wait as long as humanly possible. And whether it gives you a cheaper money line or you have to lay a similar price now or even two, you don't lose a ton of value there. So I think you wait, and I don't see any issues. I think you wait as long as possible on this one.
The man on that end of the line, he of Payne Insider fame, you can follow him on Twitter, at Payne Insider, or see his great work at PayneInsider.com. A lot of great blog posts and other sports gambling information there at your fingertips. I'm Todd Furman. You can see my work at ToddsTake.com or follow me on Twitter at Todd Furman. And Payne, this is where we turn to the loyal social media audience using the hashtag AskBetTheBoard. And let's start with Alex Clemens' question here. Goes by the Twitter handle _PBRMeASAP. Do you like to watch games you have action on or just look at the results later on?
It depends on the sport. For me, I know we talked a little bit about this previously, and I think in the NFL you definitely need to pay attention and watch what's going on. Baseball, more data-driven. I think you don't have to really watch baseball to get a key of what's going on there. But football, you definitely want to see what teams are doing, how they match up against certain opponents. And I typically aren't able to watch every single game on a Sunday, but at some point throughout the course of the week, we're going back, watching film, we're watching every single play break down. So at some point in the week, I'm watching virtually every single football game when it pertains to the NFL. And I think that's the one sport that you really have to watch.
Well, I think one thing that helps, too, and for folks that aren't aware that may own the Sunday ticket and not pay attention, they do have DirecTV offers shorts for all the games wrapped into a condensed package of about 30 minutes. So even if you're strapped for time, I definitely think it makes sense to watch a team once maybe every 3 or 4 weeks if you can't watch each and every single game they're playing in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as the market continues to trend forward in terms of live betting, that's the only way to live bet. If you're able to, you know, say I'm going into a game where I just miss, where this game is a point from where I wanted it to be, those are the kind of games, focus in one, two, or three at a time and, you know, really watch those games and then, you know, enter the market if you're a live bettor. You absolutely have to be glued to the games that you're potentially going to be live betting, and I think you set those up beforehand. You circle a game or two that, you know, numbers just missed, and those are the games you focus in on and watch.
Yeah, it definitely makes sense. You talk about live betting and the evolution we've seen in some of these North American markets. The opportunities it does present and clearly should be a tool that every handicapper keeps handy and uses books that offer those type of extended options. Now, Douglas Carrion writes up, he goes by the Twitter handle, @Douglas_BCarr. When a book makes a line of -2.5 or -6.5, are they begging for you to take the favorite? Is that accurate? And I'll go one step further, using a number of 3.5 or 7.5. Since this is a discussion you and I always have, since, you know, whether it's fair or not, sometimes have an irrational fear of taking favorites that are only a 1.5, 2-point favorite at home.
Yeah, I mean, I think more so with 2.5. And, you know, I think the long-term numbers, I don't have them in front of me, but if you're a home team and you're laying in that 2.5 range, it's typically been a money burner. You're looking at a cover rate in that 48-49% range. So it is a money burner, but it's not overly surprising when you use kind of a blanket home field advantage. The number 2.5 is kind of depicting that the road team is a better team. So it's not overly shocking. But I don't like to use it as a blanket statement across the board with some of these numbers because you do have perception involved. And when we talk about this game, I know we talked about it earlier, the Kansas City Chiefs, that was a number that was right there at 6, 6.5. And obviously we've seen sharp money on that side, and it's pushed it through the 7, and you're looking at Pinnacle dealing 7.5 now. So I think it's more something to look at when you're around the 3, not so much in that 6, 6.5 range.
And I kind of want to ask a question about that because I know we talk about this, and having worked behind the counter, you see bet splits and everything else. How much of that do you factor into the equation? If you see, say, for example, 50-50 action and the number sits at 2.5 as opposed to 70-75% of the action coming in on the dog, does that help influence or maybe push you one way or the other?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't like to get too caught up in things like that, but we definitely have that information. We're definitely in contact with sports books, getting a report on where their money's coming in. And when they're taking a stance, specifically in a primetime game, even more so, you definitely have to encompass and incorporate all the information that you're gathering. And certainly when you're dealing with a primetime spot, if you're dealing with action that's lopsided like that, and yet they're still not moving off the 2.5 to that key number, it's definitely a stop sign for me.
Yeah, I think those are all ways that you approach the market, and the more time you spend reading numbers and trying to anticipate line movement, gathering information, some of that stuff almost becomes second nature. I know it sounds a bit foreign to folks who are just getting themselves started, playing more from a recreational standpoint, but you know, that's one of those things that you hate to use a term from a book I've read, but it's thin slicing. You know, you just look at it, something feels funny, and you try and anticipate where the number is going to go. And our final question comes from Alex Dusick, goes by the Twitter handle at that same name, at Alex Dusick. How much weight do you put on the emotional status of a team? He cites the Chuck Strong example, but I'll bring up a very pertinent example this week, the Chicago Bears going through some internal chaos.
Yeah, I think emotional, that's stuff to look at. Where obviously I know a lot of people are of the age where they look at these professional athletes as superstars and they're hanging posters above their bed, but they put their pants on one leg at a time, and so you are going to have emotional swings week to week, and they definitely should be factored in. There's a lot of spots and situations that we use, and I think they're very good. So that's always key, using that emotional kind of springboard towards some handicapping, circling spots and situations that we think will have value. And one thing that's always kind of made me laugh a little bit, fortunately, being able to talk to coaches and former athletes, they really didn't know about spots and situations and emotional things like that. I talked to guys who had won big conference games, and the next week they had no idea why they didn't show up. So that was always interesting to me, and it kind of just led me to believe that these spots and these situations and emotional things definitely should be factored into the number even more than potentially I was initially doing.
Yeah, I don't think players are going to openly admit that they don't get up for a sandwich game or something along those lines, but you dig into enough historical data, and you talk about it in college hoops all the time, the 5-25 rule. There's always going to be a handful of games teams play above their capabilities, a handful of games they'll play below, and for the most of the NFL season, they're going to play very much like themselves, and those are typically the spots that you like to stay away from. And speaking of which, the game tonight featuring the Chargers and Denver Broncos, we've seen this number go all over the place from where it opened at 7, climb as high as 10. That number didn't last long. Sitting in the dead zone, depending on where you look, anywhere from 8.5 on the low end out to 9.5. What do we make of the MASH unit, more affectionately known as the San Diego Chargers defensive unit right now?
Yeah, we talked about this Monday, and I figured we would land in the dead zone. I was shocked. There was a couple 10s. Chris had a 10, did not last long. Jazz had a 10, lasted a little bit longer. But now we're in that 8, 9, 8.5 range, complete dead zone. We've seen nibbles, obviously. I think the sharp side here, as we alluded to early in the week, will be San Diego. It'll just be a matter of when to enter the market. And we've seen that resistance at 10. Does it get back to 10? Potentially, once your recreational bettors get out of work and push this line and start to enter the market. But I think it'll be a feeding frenzy for groups and sharp bettors to grab the double digits here. I was really looking forward to betting San Diego here. I've kind of, my enthusiasm subsided a little bit with some of the injuries when you talk about this San Diego defense potentially being out without their two best cornerbacks. Certainly not an offense you want to face without your two best cornerbacks. In Denver's defense, it's done a very, very good job of stopping the run. We know San Diego hasn't run the ball at all this year. So it's just, for me, I was really, really amped on going on San Diego here. I still might if I can get the right number.
And when you talk about the Chargers, for those folks who may not be that familiar, defensive injuries to Justin Verrett and Brandon Flowers in the secondary. I know before we jumped on the podcast, you mentioned a major injury to a linebacker as well. And trying to quantify that, especially in this type of matchup against the Broncos in a short week, you're never really sure exactly what you want to try and do to your power number. I wouldn't make an adjustment of anything more than a point, point and a half. And as you look at these numbers in the dead zone, I don't think you're seeing a whole lot of value created from a personal perspective. But as you allude to, taking 10, a much different story than taking 7. And the same can be said if you're looking at the Broncos now. Hard to lay 9.5 when you know you could have laid 7 on the open.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when you start dealing around 10, which is the third most prevalent key number in the NFL, you're going to see some sharp money. And again, we've seen that already at this stage. I also think your recreational bettor will be running to bet this over. And although at 51, we have seen some money come in, all the 52s are gone, I wouldn't be running to bet this game over. We've seen the last few years a tendency for this game to go under the number. If you think San Diego has a shot in this game, most likely you're looking to the under. They're going to have to continue that ball-controlled offense, and that's the question mark we have this year, where they're not running the ball very well. It'll put a lot of pressure on Phillip Rivers to complete those third downs and keep that offense on the field and Denver's offense off the field.
And you mentioned Phillip Rivers, clearly a location within the division. He has thrived, undefeated against the number here in Denver going all the way back to 2003. So San Diego, no stranger to getting the cash when they go on the road and play in the Rocky Mountain City. Much like you, Payne, I'm sitting here waiting for that number, hoping that maybe we see a 10. Even a 6.5, 7 might get me involved from a first half perspective, but want absolutely no part of this over-under as it currently sits right now at 51. Before we bid all of our listeners a fond farewell, any parting shots to try and get across as they dig back into those numbers and try and find a few winners for this weekend?
You know, the board right now is, I don't think there'll be a ton of movement. We obviously discussed Chicago, and you probably should have already gotten down on that number. It'd be interesting to see where this Baltimore-Cincinnati line goes, so keep an eye out on that one with AJ Green status. Buffalo and the Jets, I think if you can grab a decent price, 2.5, I think that's a good spot to look at also this week. So I would keep your eyes peeled on that number. And that's really about it. Not a ton of spots right now. I think it's just a waiting game at this stage.
Yeah, I think this is one of the tighter boards we've seen. And as we always warn you, there's plenty of great opportunities down the pipeline. Don't feel you have to be fully invested each and every week in the NFL. Sometimes the best decisions you'll make are the bets that you never actually walk to the window and place. For Payne Insider and PayneInsider.com, I'm Todd Furman of ToddsTake.com as well. Best of luck this NFL Week 8, and hopefully we'll see you at the window.